Oh, well.
Siren Radio.
Oh, well, never mind. Gabriella, we know what the world is waiting for. Do you have the power to quite simply deliver it? Away you go.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 1 degree centigrade. It will be a day of sunny intervals with a moderate breeze.
Excellent. For those people who were listening to the weather forecast on the Midweek Drive last night, when, of course, it was delivered as part of the news twice, I didn't see any frost this morning. I specifically tuned back to that, and they said there's going to be frost. So I got up specially to make good time to campus for 4.45 to actually leave at 5 a.m. to get into the solstice. No frost whatsoever. Bonus, of course. No time actually spent wasted defrosting car, etc. Literally straight in and doing all sorts of magic. I might be venting on that basis, but we know with Gabriella, her forecasts are always right. Sometimes the 5.45 news team on a Wednesday, I mean you, not quite the same, is it really?
It isn't.
So there we are. Take that, Gabriella, as endorsement of the essence of the Gibraltarian views in terms of where things are going, because 1 degree centigrade is not freezing. 0 degrees centigrade
really
is.
It's 16 degrees here in Gibraltar and currently, and this is cold for me. Well, if it gets below 10 sometimes in Gibraltar, that's terrible. I don't know how I lived in the UK for 3 years.
No.
I used to wear 100 layers, to be honest.
I did notice. I mean, it was rather like seeing...
Walk around like sausage legs because I used to wear leggings underneath my trousers. I used to have 3 layers.
Yeah. And that's why you became a Midweek Drivette, because I was looking at the cast and I was thinking, yeah, we're in a world where we need to actually fill quotas and actually sort of be diverse and inclusive, etc. We had a vacancy for some sausage legs. You filled it. Whoosh. Yes. The world has never looked back.
Of January and February would be sausage legs.
It's very true. I mean, Emma, do you envy Gabriella in Gibraltar in terms of the weather conditions? That's 16 degrees centigrade today. Do you think? No. No.
No, I do. I'm very cold today. I've actually got 2 layers on. I've got my tights and then my leggings on top of my tights.
Wow.
So I've not quite got sausage legs, but almost.
This is cutting level broadcasting, the likes of which, you know, Andrew, this is just wish fulfillment. Andrew, any thoughts on the weather from yourself?
It's far too cold. And I don't think the cold's really even set in as far as we know it. I'm already at my limit.
Oh, dear. Ben, presumably in the tropical nature of Brighton, this frozen north that you have to put up with, a bit too much.
Honestly, I'm glad I'll be going home next week, because it's a bit like an Inuit going to a holiday in Spain or something for the middle of summer.
Yeah, Flaherty, if he was around today, he would not scrap Nanook of the North. He'd actually have Ben from Brighton, and we'd actually
have a documentary
of yourself fishing in the frozen wastes of the English Channel, and so and it would be amazing.
I'm sure that'd be thoroughly entertaining.
I'm going to put it forward to as a possible idea.
I can't wait for it to get rejected.
Gabriella, what's happening in Gibraltar this morning? I haven't had a chance to look at the Gibraltar Chronicle because we've been talking about, as I say, the habits of the super rich with Dr. Rainer Zittelmann, who's coming on later.
The habits of the super rich, that sounds really interesting, actually. Well, they just buy shops when they go in.
Well, we'll share with you, because this is actually from his latest book, The Wealth Elite, a groundbreaking study of the psychology of the super rich, and he investigated people who had personal assets of up to 7 billion euros. So, it's relatively small fry, I suppose, 6.2 billion pounds if you're looking at the assets. And he came up with the notion that most folk are resilient in defeat, able to get over negative experiences quickly. They understand what makes the average person tick, and they enjoy making money in an atypical way from a relatively young age, as well as being supremely optimistic.
I guess if you had lots of money, you'd be optimistic. You know, the future is bright for you, isn't it?
Everybody.
You don't have really much money woes. You don't have to. I always think, if I was that rich, because at least now you can save for something and you look forward to maybe getting something or working to your next step in life. Yeah. But when you've literally got it all handed to you, planted to you, and then they just buy and buy because they have nothing to...
Exactly.
And they don't have to work towards anything because they've already got it all. So I guess maybe work towards the next billion or something like that. But
Well, again, Ben, as the official University of Lincoln secret billionaire, that
of course, I'm
effectively
sure.
has trusted.
You're going to get me a quote from Bentley now, are we?
No. But your thoughts on this sort of aspect?
Yeah, I reckon I'd agree much with what you pointed out there, especially with the statement about them being optimistic. And I mean, I've met quite a few wealthy people on my year out, and you know, they're all very normal people in a lot of ways, and the way they think and the way they do things, and they're very careful with their money. But I can see what you mean. I mean, the people in you know, multi-billionaires, I can see what you mean, Gabriel, in terms of how, you know, what do you work towards if you feel like you've already earned it and already got it. I imagine that's probably one of the daily struggles of being a multi-billionaire, but
just the challenges of life.
Exactly. It's not challenges I'm quite at the minute worrying about.
Remember, you have all the billions of the world, but if you don't get an invite to the midweek drive, forget it. It's worthless.
Exactly. Or a calendar.
It's there for you, Ben.
Priceless.
It's upstairs with your name on it. Is be delivered to you next week, probably next Thursday.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Look forward to it.
Big reveal. Actually, Emma is in the calendar. She hasn't as yet graduated, having her own personal copy. We might see about that, but she is in the calendar.
Yeah. That's kind of like the initiation. You can have the calendar.
This is very true. Andrew, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your time on the show?
I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again?
Yep. Next week, hopefully.
Will. It'll be the last one of 2018, Gabriella. It's amazing. By the way, what is the state of play of Frodo?
He is very much awake today. Mm. He's just standing about. But, yeah, he's awake. And grooving.
Very much awake, just standing about, grooving and doing the whole thing as Frodo would, basically. So that's great stuff. So, I mean, clearly for him, the weather is fine. It's absolutely spot on, and there's no messing about with that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. That's what we like to work through. I was going to offer Gabriella the chance to actually select some music, but I thought, no, I won't do that. next week, we'll get something sorted out then, I'm sure.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Almost there. Paradise, paradise, so oh.
take that as a festive theme after a fashion, really. Andy Williams and Almost There. And how many sleeps to go before Aquaman arrives? I know, it's very exciting, isn't it? And Mary Poppins and the Spider-Man. It's just amazing, isn't it? And, oh, well, never mind. The whole festive holiday season. Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are the shops in London?
Well, they are indeed absolutely, firstly, humming with masses of people. But I had a fascinating experience just a few days ago when I happened to be in Harrods just before 9 o'clock. If anyone wants to buy something there, if you actually want to see the shop, there was almost nobody there. I mean, that was extraordinary. I have to say that.
It's called fear, Richard. Fear from being very careful with what's finances, or possibly maybe just the internet. You know, why should you go into Harrods when you can actually block up the roads by getting lots of delivery lorries to actually sort of deliver your presents for you? Let's be honest.
But make no mistake, they're there earlier. It's just if you go between 8:30 and 9 and you'd like to actually like to see Harrods, see what sort of shop it is, see what's in the, on the very, behind the various, you know, the counters and the beautiful decorations and the Christmas festivities and so forth, the various decorations that they have are always rather fun. But also just see the shop as a whole. I mean, without anybody else, with bar a very, very few. I've always been in Harrods, and it's a packed, seething mass. But it doesn't alter the fact that they've got dummies, they've got mannequins, and quite honestly, trashy windows. I have to say that, I have to be frank. I mean, compare it with Harvey Nicks, you can't. I mean, that's a cornucopia of glories. It's got youth, but people, but mannequins with, so to speak, with faces. So there's something human, but also there's a glorious, glorious mix of colours. I mean, Harvey Nick's windows are absolute heaven.
Well, there we are. You've called it out and said it quite clearly, Richard, and we see no reason to say anything other than that. Apart from that, I notice you are enjoying a festive evening at Bonham's with Penny Williamson recently, and indeed also mentioned that Christmas toys are such fun. You'd think Christmas was for children or something. No, it's for the whole family. Children are just byproducts of the whole system. Anyway, that's by the by. You've put up the Christmas tree, I see, Richard.
I have. You're right. I have. I always enjoyed it, especially it reminds me of Christmases, which I absolutely loved when I was a child. But also I've got quite a few decorations, and, you know, you keep them year by year and then add to them. And the fairy on the top, I have to say, is from
Harrods. Exactly.
Yes, yes. So that has to be mentioned.
Yesterday, of course, we had our song contest challenge. I think this time around it's only fair to give the Midweek Drive a chance to actually critically comment on Richard Fitzwilliams' Christmas tree. Emma, thoughts on that from an interior decor point of perspective? We've got a number of sort of images of the tree. Any thoughts so far?
Well, I think it's very pretty. I like a good Christmas tree, and mm-hmm. I think that's I like the gold and is it silver on there as well? Gold,
it looks like that, or maybe he's been photoshopping it. I don't know. It's, after all, it's just
it's a total mix of colours. Quite a few animals, birds. Mm. There's a
any chinchillas.
You know, I hadn't thought of that, but what a wonderful thought. The next an idea I had taken
well,
on board.
Yeah, let's face it, Kira Alsbrook and her chinchilla in the tree. Key, in fact, she was always so excited by that, she was poorly yesterday. So get well, Kira. That's importantly. Mind you, where would she have fitted into the studio, Ben? That's what we say. Where would she have
absolutely
fitted?
Nowhere.
Exactly. Don't worry, Kira. There'll be a place for you when you return in the new year. Over to yourself, please, Andrew. The thoughts of the tree.
I like it. Yeah, it gets a seal of approval from me. It's really got that nice family Christmas tree vibe with quite a mix of different ornaments.
And animals, but no chinchillas. Yeah. No. Poodle made from pipe cleaners.
No. That's a favourite of mine. As a child, I thought was such fun.
No. I think it gets a 9 out of 10 from me. Would have been 10 out of 10 with a chinchilla.
No, thank you. The chinchilla perhaps sticks here, or indeed the year after. I will have to keep my eye on the chinchilla, because you see all these different animals. I mean, Harrods has quite a few floodlit animals. A reindeer with a fur muff was an absolute hoot, I thought. And, it is amusing to wander around the parts of shops dedicated to Christmas. Of course, the joy here, I mean, I put a few lights up and also holly over the different paintings and so forth, which is quite fun because as a child...
Richard, honestly, you're so kind of festive. It's a whole side to your
character. It's a little child in a sweet shop, isn't it?
Exactly. And to actually use the phrase reindeer with a fur muff is just more than blissful on a morning like today.
In floodlit in part, not at the Harrods, windows which look outside to the street where it would have greatly improved things, I have to say, because I just can't cope with those faceless mannequins. I've complained before, I'm complaining again. But inside, which is a really great pun, the animals are far, far preferable to, well, the non-humans.
There you go. And Ben, your thoughts on the tree?
Yeah, no, the tree looks lovely from my perspective. I'll tell you what, Richard, you should be a freelance sort of shop window designer at Christmas. I think, honestly, there's some good money in it for you.
There you go. Another bonus from that perspective.
Richard. Well, there's no question, you know, if you look at it from the Fortnum's windows, it's absolutely hilarious that there's a sleigh being pulled not by reindeer but by mince pies or a dancing lobster or a cracker and a turkey.
Okay, see, if you've been imbibing too much, you might think you've actually gone on a major trip there to all kinds of strange things. It could be
well, you would, but then on the other hand, liberties too, with the theme of animals, cardboard animals, but rather quirky. I mean, so the monkey swings down and steals something from the Christmas feast, which the other animals are enjoying. I mean, it's great fun.
Yeah. And indeed, so symbolic of the times in which we're living.
Well, we better not get on to those. I mean,
200 is better than 199, Richard. Let's move on to, not considering numbers, but considering your first review for the penultimate session of the year, that will be Roma.
Yes, Roma is a film which I have to recommend, and I must say that I would not be surprised. You've heard it here, but it's all over the net. The thought that Alfonso Cuarón... wonderful director, Children of Men, various movies from Great Expectations to one of Harry Potter's. I mean, the facts of the matter, Prisoner of Azkaban was. It's a wonderful example of realism because it's semi-autobiographical and it's based on his childhood and it's set in the 1970s, mainly in Mexico City. And you see, he observes. This is the camera. This is the director as observer. You see the life of a middle-class family and the live-in maid who cares for them, and she is the main character. There's a wonderful performance by Yalitza Aparicio as Cleo, who is the maid for this family, an indigenous maid, and it's shot in black and white. It resembles a documentary. It's so vivid and atmospheric. And but the opening shot's quite interesting because you just see water move across tiles. It's basically the maid about to clean them. But there's just something poetic about it. And I love this film from the very, very beginning. Evocative visuals and sound. It can have a lyrical effect, but there are pretty dramatic episodes. For example, Cleo Can't Swim. Two of the children, who she's looking after, move rather far into the breakers, into the deep sea, and get swept out to sea. What happens? What indeed also happens when protesting students are being fired on when they riot, the appallingly bloody consequences. I mean, the volatility that Mexico... or we associate with Mexico, it's very, very much present in this film. But one of the reasons it's received so much praise is that we get so involved in the story. This is the world of Sofia, played by Marina de Tavira, her mother and also her family of four children, her marriage to Antonia, played by Fernando Grandiaga, who we only fleetingly see is breaking up. They employ two maids, and Cleo is pregnant by her lover, Fermin, played by Jorge Antonio Guerrero. He practices martial arts, and which who he turns out to be will be somewhat shocking. And the memorable moments in this movie, there's the emotional scene where Cleo gives birth, there's a sequence where a forest fire interrupts a party, an earthquake hits a hospital, and vigilantes gun down an escaping protector. So it protester. So I mean, the family's got this dynamic, and we see the story, or much of the story, from the point of view of the maid, for whom they're devoted. She's considered part of the family, but obviously there's a social message, the huge disparities of wealth and the opportunities between the better off and the impoverished who inhabit the slums, who we see occasionally, and also fascinating to see the lure of the big city with its cinemas and shopping malls and traffic jams, and contrast that with the tranquil surroundings of the countryside, and also the seaside with its dangers if you go too far into the ocean. Very poetic exteriors, but the cast is perfection. I mean, you don't feel that either actors. This is what I loved about this film, and Cuarón wrote, co-edited, photographed, produced and directed. It's a deeply unequal society, but this is a very, very personal film, and it gives us an insight into how a very unorthodox director, who's made a whole series of very, very contrasting films, is very versatile, how he grew up.
So I take it you wouldn't say arrivederci.
I would say go and see it.
Okay. Let's see what the team will actually say. Ben, will you be checking out Roma?
Yeah, certainly give it a go.
Black and white.
I don't mind a black and white film.
But you'll be involved in it. You won't notice that. Or you will notice it in the sense that you will feel part of it.
Okay. Emma.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He looks like a really nice, kind of impactful film. So.
Okay. Yeah. And Andrew?
Yeah, it looks really interesting. It's a Netflix movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I watch it on my personal device, personally. Don't see it in the cinema.
It has opened in cinemas.
It wants an award. That's the reason it's gone into cinemas, because it wants an award.
It'll be... yes, you're right there. There's a very, very big problem at Cannes. Without going into all of that, it'll be on Netflix from today.
Okay.
Yes,
From the hashtag MeToo slot, and we are fairly pushing time
tomorrow.
On this. Exactly. But from the hashtag MeToo, apparently, according to the Daily Telegraph, tulip fever is covered in Harvey Weinstein's grubby fingerprints.
That is one way of introducing the film. I would suggest that the best way of dealing with this movie is to avoid it. Frankly, it is perfectly true. It was from the Weinstein stable. But let's look at the film as is, because they released it in a large number of cinemas. This was made about 3 years ago, and quite frankly, I had no idea they made films like this, for example. There is a scene in this, I swear to you, it exists, where an artist... It's Jan de Loos, played by Diane de Haan, a portrait painter, in 1643. He shouts, "Eureka, I'm in love." And then he runs to see his beloved in her Amsterdam home beside, obviously, the canals, which make Amsterdam such a glorious place to visit. So what they should really have done was taken all the copies of this movie and thrown them into the canals, and then it should have vanished without trace. I'm just starting. The delayed release is one thing, but frankly, I think somebody actually saw the movie, hid it, and they've only just discovered where it has been put, because quite frankly...
It's got Cara Delevingne. He was in Suicide Squad. What's not to love?
There's a lot to love when it comes to the cast. Alicia Vikander, Kanda, Christoph Waltz, Judy Dench. The whole point is this movie is at a tosh. It should have been interesting. It could have been interesting. The crash of between the inflated market and tulips, which happened in the 1640s, and the credit crunch. There's a link, the evils and the excesses of capitalism. But here, wait. It's got a script co-authored not only by the author of the novel, Deborah Mugatsch, but also Tom Stoppard. And Anthony Blanche put it very well in Brideshead Revisited.
We featured his former wife, Miriam Stoppard, fairly regularly on the programme, so, you know, he's just talking
about...
Well,
I, I can only say that I was absolutely bewildered to see this, because you've got a complete and total waste. The story is that Sophia, played by Alicia Vikander, remember her? Yes, you will. You will, from Dragon
She was
Tattoo.
In The Man from U.N.C.L.E. That's all you need to know. Guy Ritchie's Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I think you should need to know something about...
and Ex Machina.
Swedish... oh, yes, that was very good. Now, we agree there it was. But here she's an orphan married to a wealthy merchant, Cornelius, played by Christoph Waltz, very fine actor, in a loveless marriage arranged so he can conceive. But when the portrait painter is commissioned to paint them and falls in love with Sophia... Well, here's the ridiculous part of it. You see, her maid, Maria, played by Holiday Granger, who also narrates the movie, has an affair with the local fishmonger villain, played by Jack O'Connell. She becomes pregnant. She fears she will lose her job, and here we're getting to farce. She knows about Sophia's affair. She blackmails her into pretending it's she who's pregnant, and by Cornelius, who's overjoyed at the news. You even hear Christoph Waltz sing. You wouldn't want to do that. Nicole Kidman in Australia singing over the
radio. Richard, in a pitch, thing better or worse than Pierce Brosnan in Mamma Mia? Singing,
that
is.
I have to say that there isn't a comparison. Quite. Not quite. Okay. Not quite. Okay. I rather liked Mamma Mia, I have to say. We're dealing here with a wasted Christoph Waltz.
Oh, dear.
Firstly, he's myopic because the maid's got a very substantial bump, and he doesn't notice. He doesn't even see it.
Because he's in love.
And then there is a question: when you're pregnant, you occasionally throw up. He doesn't recognise which of the two are throwing up. I mean, the scenes get so ridiculous.
So in
a script as bad as this, director Justin Chadwick, what he's done is, he's seen the girl with the pearl earring, a beautiful painting which hangs at the Moritz House, where I was a few months ago, absolutely lovely, but the facts are that that made money. This will lose whatever.
Okay, Richard, in the words of the Irish Times, tulip fever, a cornucopia of rumpy pumpy that should have been left on the shelf. Okay.
Shelf? I mean, the point, unfortunately, is you've got sets and costumes, yeah, and they've tried.
I think you've made your point, Richard. I personally think I can't wait to see Tulip Fever. It looks
well,
as if it's outstanding.
You better be quick.
Ben, will you be going?
I think I prefer the first one, if I'm honest. But it does sound interesting. It does sound interesting. Just not my thing.
Okay.
It is in theory.
Okay, Tulip without the fever. What about
I think I'll stick with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Nice, nice, good point. And Emma?
I'm not sure. That hasn't really sold it for me.
He hasn't. Yeah, strange, actually. Yeah. I would have thought it was a glowing review in many ways. Last two questions for Richard, please. Emma?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Always I do, and I certainly have today.
Good. And will you be joining us again soon?
Oh, yes, certainly next week.
Aquaman, Spider-Verse. Getting to serious movies then.
Well.
Everybody's in a hurry, in a flurry, shopping till they're dropping in the snow. Kids are crying, dogs are barking, catching up with folks we barely know. Sure, it's madness, but it's magic. As soon as you hang up the mistletoe, 'cause you're the reason for the season. But we don't need to keep up with the Joneses. Our love is something priceless. I don't need diamonds, no sparkly things. 'Cause you can't find this feeling. A cozy little Christmas here with you. So Mr. Santa, take the day off,
take the day off.
Get a massage, 'cause we got this one all under control. A little whiskey, we're getting frisky.
Ooh.
And so dancing to Nat King Cole. No, we ain't stressing, just caressing.
Mm-hmm.
Warming up our popsicle toes. Nothing's missing, 'cause you're a blessing. Yeah, you're the only one I'm wishing for. Our love is something priceless. I don't
cozy little Christmas here with you. I don't need anything. Take back all the Cartier and the Tiffany's and the Chanel. Well, can I keep that Chanel, please? No, 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 no.
Well, at least we know what Katy Perry is actually looking for Christmas. Hey ho. But would she get it from the high street? Would she go online? Who knows? We're delighted now to welcome an entrepreneur and global leader in the field of small business mergers and acquisitions, based in Singapore, and talking today about how there is a possible strategy which you can use to save the problems in the high street. It's the awesomely wonderful Jeremy Harbour. How are you, Jeremy? Good evening.
I'm great, thank you very much. Yeah, that's a very nice introduction, thank you.
Always important. Now, as I say, currently in Britain it's 8:33 a.m. Presumably in Singapore it's somewhat later.
Yeah, 4:33.
There you are. Taking this afternoon. How civilized. It's always like being back in the early days of the 20th century. Harbour Club Entrepreneurial Training Course is obviously running four times a year in the UK. And your solution actually lies in this wonderful word called agglomeration, a new business model to actually allow a whole range of other bits and pieces. So talk to us, Jeremy, about this strategy, which has been described as economic brilliance to save the high street.
Well, look, the high street's been attacked from all angles over, well, a few decades, really. You know, you've had a kind of conspiring bunch of factors ranging from, you know, upward-only rent reviews from sort of landlords, and then the squeeze from local councils, not only on business rates, but on parking and the focus on out-of-town shopping. And then if that wasn't enough, along came the internet and kind of seemed to give it a death knell. But, you know, I've been doing this thing, harbourclubevents.com, for a few years in the, well, since 2009 in the UK and in lots of other countries. And we kind of noticed there's a common theme, which is that kind of small to medium-sized businesses are really the engine of the economy. You know, it's 50% of GDP, and most of the private sector workforce work in these small companies. But they're always the back of the queue when it comes to tax treatment, getting money from the banks, getting decent credit card processing facilities, access to capital for investment and growth. And this really has created a massively unlevel playing field between those SMEs, which are so systemically important, and the big businesses that they're competing with. You know, I mean, if you look at the out-of-town stores, you know, quite often they've got planning permission where a small business owner would never be able to, because they've got lobbying groups and lawyers, and then when you look at the, you know, the age of the internet, then often they don't often have the same tax footprint in the UK as you'd have to have if you have a bricks and mortar store. So it's become very, very difficult for, you know, the general entrepreneur to compete.
I was fascinated by the findings that UK high street suffered 5,855 store closures in 2017. Presumably that's is quite apart from the number of fast food outlets and gambling areas that also opened up from that point of view. We lost a lot of character. 11 stores a day opened while 16 a day closed. Those are the figures. In the studio, we've got three fine folk who I think have done their fair share of work in the retail market in one way, shape or form. Emma, your thoughts on retail? I mean, here we are in Lincoln, the city of Lincoln, England. And, you know, the Christmas market has just been had. What are your thoughts on this little finding?
I suppose it's not really that surprising, but it is a shame. I mean, I think I've done a fair bit of my Christmas shopping online, but I try and go into the shops as well. But, but yeah, it's not surprising, but it's just a...
Okay. Ben?
Yeah, I agree with Emma on a lot of the things. I mean, I think the other struggle is a lot of independent businesses are finding it hard to establish themselves online as well. And then with that, obviously, because they're only based in one place, it's difficult to arrange certain things, whether it be postage and things like that. But I understand from a lot of people's perspective that they do want to shop locally, but I think it's just because online has far more choice and far more out there for them to get, and it's for added convenience. I think that's why people do it. Recently, actually, there was a debit card company, a credit card company, put out a television advert. I'm able to plug it. It's Visa, on their advert, it encourages people to use the high street and uses local businesses, which I think is brilliant.
Does it need that, Jeremy, in terms of, are we looking at this kind of Save the High Street campaign to work through that whole basis that, you know, it's the economics of the situation that people will open work on that.
Look, you can't rescue a dead business model, but there has been a resurgence in those kind of artisanal businesses. So, you know, there's been the butcher that specializes in the grass-fed organic meats, there's been the specialist bakers, and all these ones have actually been able to kind of launch a little bit of a comeback, or people offering, you know, specialist products and services that perhaps don't sell very well over the internet. I mean, there's been a huge surge in these, you know, vaping shops and things like this. And so there's part of it that the businesses have to step up and offer something that's competitive and interesting. But there's the other part, which is this leveling of the playing field I mentioned. And you know, the structure that we talk about is very much about getting groups of these entrepreneurial businesses together and using their scale as a group to try and compete on vaguely level terms with some of the bigger players. So part of it is they need to step up, and part of it is they need the playing field leveled a little bit against competitors that, like I say, have a different tax footprint and have a different cost base to the small business owner.
Classic case of united we stand, divided we will fall. Andrew, thoughts from yourself? Yes.
I do wonder if in this day and age, actual shopping on the high street is becoming a bit of a novelty, because when I think about times when people, I've gone around with friends looking around the stores, I think that they've become few and far between. I think that we're kind of in an age where if people seriously want something, they'll just go online and get it.
Is it a case of the tide has turned, Jeremy, and we actually have a situation where you can't fight progress?
Well, so I think, you know, there are certain things you can't buy a coffee and a donut on the internet, and
not yet.
There are certain experiences that that can still be gained. Look, I'm out here in Singapore, and we definitely don't have this massive switch towards the internet, but then we do have very integrated sort of living working units. So in the areas, in every sort of area, there are shops, hotels, bars, restaurants, homes, and offices all in a tight proximity to each other. So I guess like it used to be in the high street. Mm. And if I go to a Chanel shop, for example, again without wishing to plug a particular brand, at the weekend they'll have a queue which is one in, one out to buy a $10,000 handbag. You go to Chanel in London and the queue is the staff looking to serve you. So there's a very different approach to that, you know, shopping as an experience out here in Asia, which we seem to have lost a bit, I think, in the UK.
It's a fascinating point, because an awful lot of things that happen in Asia and the Far East and so on actually emerge in all sorts of ways later in the sort of years in the Western world and so on. Jeremy, where can people go to find out further details about your advice, your suggestions and so on and so forth?
Yeah, so I mean, follow me on Twitter, Jeremy J. Harbour, Harbour spelled as in the English way, or harbourclubevents.com is the boot camp that we have in the UK to learn about buying and selling companies or agglomerating companies together. Or there is a book, Agglomerate, From Idea to IPO in 12 Months, which you can buy and find all about the structure.
And that is one of the reasons, Jeremy, why not only are you CEO and founder of the Unity Group and also founder and former chairman of the Marketing Group, but very soon I'm sure you will be Coutts Entrepreneur of the Year. You've been runner-up three times. You're going to get that. We're on your side, Jeremy. You've made the whole thing. We'll go with that.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
No, Jeremy, the campaign starts here. Yeah, that's the key thing. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
It's been fantastic.
Excellent. So can we prevail upon you to connect with us again from Singapore, probably sometime in 2019?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to follow up on where this went. Yeah.
A round of applause for Jeremy Harbour, please. Yay!
The spirit's up, we're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on,
feelings here that only comes this time of year. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The choir of children sing their song.
Absolutely, and from Paul McCartney to somebody who can give new meaning to the word curmudgeonly. Only kidding, Ian. There's no bar humbug in the Lennox household, is there?
There's not a Christmas tree in sight.
I thought you'd say that. It's just
a few weeds in the garden, but that's about it.
Lord above, honestly. Never mind. So, the juxtaposition here. Richard Fitzwilliams, the wonderful toys and Christmas celebrations and so on, and Ian Lennox, not a Christmas tree in sight.
I've got four Christmas cards, though.
We sent you an electronic one.
Yes, I noticed that, yes. Yes, thank you very much.
Okay,
I can't put it on the mantelpiece, can I?
You could print it off and do a whole stack of other things with respect to that.
Beyond me, as you well know.
Never mind, it'll happen. It's going to be brief because you are waiting for a parcel to be delivered. Now.
Oh, no, I'm waiting for three pieces of tea to be delivered.
Exactly, well, that's a big parcel.
Same thing.
Wrapped
in the door. So,
now, did you order that online or did you actually order it in the stores?
I went to the stores.
Oh, yeah. So you see, bucking the trend there.
And well, but I see you order the tea, you want to try it out, don't you?
Okay. So what colour is it, Ian?
Black.
Right.
Black leather.
Oh.
I see it's three-piece and a two-seater as well.
Right. See, that's what other radio stations could often benefit from, actually, asking their co-presenters, what is your favourite settee? What is it? Well, let's do a quick one. Emma, do you have a favourite settee in terms of favourite style? Black leather, does that work for you?
No, not really. No. Don't often go for black leather. Not in there. No, not very comfortable.
Okay. Could slip around a lot, yeah. I would have thought. Andrew?
Anything that reclines, I'm happy on, basically.
Does it recline, Ian?
Yes, it does. Right, it's got an electronic device that you just press a little button and whoop, up the seat goes.
Ooh. I'll be round later then.
And Ben?
Yeah.
I accept my electricity bill to go up somewhat, as I play with
yes,
it.
Yes, and yes, next week we'll find out what the settee is actually like when Ian's posterior will actually sit on it.
Is it like one of those armchairs you see in the motorway services? You know those massage armchairs you see in the motorway services?
Is it like one of them? Oh, yes, no.
Put a pound in and then you get 10 minutes of massage.
Yes, I know.
It's a way forward.
People asleep, miss your plane.
Ian, it's probably been the best telephonic link we've ever had with you from that point of view. We haven't even mentioned the club that might be sold, but anyway, that'll come next week. Are you okay, and have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show
today?
Sure,
but sweet.
Well, who's that coming up the door? I know, it's the settee deliverer.
Not Santa.
Oof. If it's Santa, I'll let you know.
We'll speak again next week, yes?
Okay, mate.
There'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth, but instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and the distant choir, and the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story till I believed it.
in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas, and I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn, and I saw him and threw his disguise. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain and sadness, leave your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be hail and hail. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
Could, of course, be the music that we actually have to actually see the delivery of the settee at Ian Lennox Household. Up next, hopefully, Ryan Sidebottom and Bola Gibson and how local charities can benefit from banks.
Everyone's a kid at Christmas time. A holly jolly kid at Christmas time. Everyone from Maine to Baton Rouge got the trains, eating candy canes, and trimming trees. Some nice old guy is riding through the sky, but you believe he's jumping into chimneys. Whoa, everyone's a kid at Christmas time. A holly jolly kid at Christmas time. Now's the time to throw your cares away. It's such a treat, and goodness knows that same old guy still riding through the sky and talking to a reindeer with a big red nose. Whoa, everyone's a kid at Christmas time, a holly jolly kid at Christmas time. Everyone from 1 to 93 feeling free.
Indeed, Stevie Wonder, everyone is a kid at Christmas time, and local charities can benefit in a whole range of ways because they are the unsung heroes of our local communities. With Local Charities Day occurring tomorrow, new research from TSB shows that while 88% of Brits donate to charity, in the past 6 months they've been more likely to give to a major charity than a small local charity. To start redressing this balance, a legend in so many ways, the Yorkshire and England international bowler extraordinaire with a career that spanned over 20 years as a professional cricketer. It's the amazing Ryan Sidebottom. How are you, Ryan?
How are you? Good morning. How are we doing?
Very well indeed. We've also got the equally wonderful head of community at TSB, Bola Gibson. How are you, Bola?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, Bola, let's come to you first initially. Talk to us about what TSB are actually doing to hopefully develop Local Charities Day.
So Local Charities Day happens each year, and we've done some research to kind of help support the messages on the day. One of the bits of research showed that nearly half of British people said they would give more to local charities if they were more aware of them. And so what we're trying to do, because we support local charities, we have our local charity partnership program, and we support about 450 local charities in Britain. And so tomorrow for Local Charities Day, we are encouraging our local charity partners to come into our branches and encouraging the public and our customers to go and find out more about them and to see how they can support them, because any support, I think, is welcome.
Ryan, presumably you'd agree with this and again say, yes, this is what makes Britain great.
Of course, you know, we do great things in this country. We do give to charity. I think the scary thing for me is we know that the international charities, national charities, do amazing work, so they are very well known and well world renowned. But in this country, 50% of people can't name any local charity in their area, and that is a really scary fact. I only knew, living in a local village, I only knew because being fortunate enough to be in the public eye, people would come to me and say, oh, we need some new facilities for the local park. We need to raise money for a coffee morning for the elderly who, you know, are single and they're on their own and they need people to talk to and communicate to. Martin House Hospice, which is in Wetherby, which is where I live, you know, do great work in terms of children with life-limiting illnesses. But I only knew about these because people came to me. So people donate money, but it's to the major charities. I think there's much more we can do in terms of donating to our local charities who also do amazing work, but a lot of people don't know about them, which is vitally important. We need to do more.
Absolutely. In the studio, you've got three fine folk who are doing all manner of wonderful things in their own ways. Ben, Lewis, first of all, any questions?
Yeah, so obviously, I know, like you're saying, a lot of local charities don't have a huge profile. Would you say people tend to go to the bigger charities because there's more knowledge of them and rather than the local charities? Do you feel like people don't understand the local charities as much just because of publicity, things like that, for example?
So I think we're all short on time, aren't we? I know that as a parent, I'm constantly running around. I barely remember what I had for breakfast half the time. So, you know, people are relatively time poor. So if you are a local charity, so, you know, for example, you know, our local charity for Gainsborough is, you know, Stepping Stone Theatre. How much time do they have? You know, these charities are run by volunteers a lot of the time. They don't have big marketing budgets. So I think whatever we can do to help shine a light on them and make it easy, I think, for people to find out what they do, how they support the local community, is something that we should do. And I think, as you know, as TSB, we're a local business. So what we're trying to do is to encourage people to find out more, to do that research and to get to know what's right on their doorstep.
Absolutely. Works splendidly. Emma.
Yeah, I mean, I feel pretty bad because I don't think I know any of our...
Well, that's outrageous, Emma. You should put that right straight away in the second hour of the programme. Briefly, Andrew?
I have to say that I'm quite surprised about the research that shows there's more trust in larger national charity brands, because my perception is that a lot of people consider these to be quite top-heavy and that the money they put in may just go back into the marketing
Mentioning
machine.
No names, but we've had a number of major charities that have had huge issues with respect to that. But that's another story for another time. Best way to actually find out more about this, Bola, where would you actually suggest people should go to?
So, obviously, I definitely encourage you to pop into Gainsborough tomorrow and see Stepping Stone Theatre, which is our local charity partner. You can also, if you're interested in becoming a local charity partner and want to find out more, visit our TSB website. And you can also search Local Charities Day on the internet, and there is a wonderful map where you can find lots of local charities in your area.
Perfect. Now, Ryan, briefly, before you head off, we've got some key advice to ensure that Wetherby triumphs and actually finishes number one in this Dancing on Ice thing that's coming up, because we've been contacting our former midweek drivettes, and Perry Shake Straighten, Olympic athlete who was actually involved last year, has got these three top tips for you. So, Ben, would you like to deliver them?
So, her top tips were, you need to be fearless. You don't be afraid to fall.
So don't be afraid to fall and be fearless.
Thank you for that.
And she said also that you need to make sure you tie up your skates properly.
Always important.
And obviously enjoy it as well.
That there you are. Those are the three tips. So tie up the skates. And we like to feel we're sharing that positivity. Really.
Exactly. We hope it contributes and I hope it helps.
Exactly.
And then if you win, you've got to dedicate these tips to us, you know.
Yeah, to Perry and you guys, of course we'll. I mean, the thing is, with Dance on Ice quickly, it allows me to speak about these charities and raise awareness, so it's great to be on the radio and to be here talking to you guys and to get the awareness out there that local charities really do need our help.
You see, that is why I said Ryan Sidebottom a legend, not just the whole notion of the 37th ever international bowler to take a test match hat-trick. Awesome. I can't believe it's 2008. A round of applause for Ryan Sidebottom and Bowler Gibson. Fantastic stuff from there. It's been fabulous sharing some thoughts with the good self. We're going up to the news now with a whole variety of other bits and pieces. Remember, local charity is very important. And let's say it. Good luck, Ryan Sidebottom.
Good luck. Very good luck.
Thank you very much.
And the weather today, highs of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 1 degree centigrade. And as far as Lincoln's concerned, it's going to be a day of sunny intervals with a moderate, emphasise moderate, breeze. I'm on my own.
that keeps me together when I'm far from home. I won't keep it out of sight, and I think I'm gonna write it on the walls of the world, so everyone
festive season, and we're heading into 2019, and it's a time of uncertainty perhaps, but it seems that when it comes to having a whole range of wealth, etc., a new wealth elite study has been developed, and it's found that the super rich, and in this particular instance we're talking about people who have personal assets of up to 7 billion euros, which is 6.2 billion pounds, tend to be non-conformists who love to swim against the tide and do things differently to ordinary people. They reject authority, they may have had major confrontations with those in positions of power, and so on. Who better then to actually address some of the habits and attitudes of the super rich than an awesome individual who's one of Germany's leading sociologists, historians, and entrepreneurs, the author of 21, that's 21, international best-selling books. Yes, the awesome Dr. Rainer Zittelmann. Good day, Dr. Zittelmann. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Good.
Good morning.
Well, yes. Guten Morgen, exactly. Wherever we happen to be. Now, this particular study, it just seems to be quite fascinating. Just share with us why you decided to actually start investigating the super rich.
Yes, because I wondered why scientists are not interested in it. There are hundreds of so-called self-guide or self-help books, how to become rich quickly. And this is a sign that people are really interested in the topic. But my book is absolutely not such a book, because it's not how to get rich very quickly, but it's a scientific research, an academic research. And my question was whether there's a correlation between the personality of the super rich and how likely it is that someone will succeed in becoming rich. This was what I wanted to know.
It's certainly interesting that in terms of folk in the media, we know Richard Branson, for instance, and indeed Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they all kind of dropped out of college. They did their own thing. So they kind of fulfilled that notion of going against the tide and effectively coming up with things which maybe, you know, the general majority of people might say, oh, don't do that, don't go there, and so on. So, you know, presumably that, together with being supremely optimistic, very much part of these characteristics that manifest success, perhaps.
Yes, you mentioned two important points. First of all, school and university education were by no means the key factor. You mentioned Richard Branson, for example, Steve Jobs, and Bill Gates, who were school dropouts. And most of my interviewees benefited from a good school and university education, but in this they did not differ from many others. In any case, their performance was usually average. One key finding from the biographical questions I asked during the interviews was that there's absolutely no correlation between the interviewer's achievements at school or university and the scale of wealth they went on to achieve. There were other points that were very important, and you mentioned one. One important characteristic was that many of the super rich enjoy swimming against the stream. I call them non-conformists. They do things differently from the majority. And I think it's logical. If you do the same things like everyone, you will not get hundreds of millions euro or pounds. And one billionaire gave me a beautiful example. And he became rich, very rich with yogurt and with milk. And so his example is with cows. And I tell you a story. It's a herd of cows. It's walking along a path. And on the left, there's a lush field. On the right, the field is quite dry and the grass is nowhere near as lush. And 99 cows go to the field on the left. What happens? The grass there is quickly eaten, and only one cow goes to the right. And this cow gets on to eat and eat and eat long after there's no grass left in the field on the left. And that's what this billionaire told me. I said, this is the way I acted, and this was a reason for my success. But there are some more things, but I think to swim against the stream, this is one thing that's absolutely important.
Absolutely. Of course, the power of persuasion is very important, and I was interested to find that one of the lines was that they tend to be folk super rich, that is, who are able to convince others that their way is the right way. That can be a bit dangerous for the rest of society, I would have thought, in terms of if you go down a charismatic route and sort of suddenly suck into to that whole system. But at the same time, having confidence in your own judgments, being supremely optimistic, these again characteristics. Not, I mean, failure breeds more failure, success perhaps looks to success as a good friend as well.
Yes, but you should be aware of the fact that almost all of the entrepreneurs and investors reported serious setbacks and crises, some of which were extremely serious. And what I found out, it's very important how did react to these setbacks and crises. And I think it's striking that the interviewers, the super rich, demonstrated a fundamental attitude of not blaming external circumstances or other people for setbacks and crises, but looked for the cause of the problems they were facing in themselves. You know, usually it's this way. If people have success, they say, it was me. And if there's a failure or a setback, it's always the others. They were bad at school, it was the teacher's fault, or the society, or the parents, or their education, and what's on. And with the super rich, they acted very differently. They never saw themselves as victims of circumstances or of actions of their rivals. They always took personal responsibility for any problems. Nor did they use negative market developments as an excuse for their difficulties. They blamed themselves for misjudging the market. And you know, if you say it's not the others but it's me, this gives you a feeling of power. If it is me, if I blame me, then I can change it. And maybe another very important point, how they reacted to crisis. They did not only just focus on solving the problem and restoring the status quo, but they tried always to turn setbacks into opportunities. A lot of them repeatedly reported how their crises and setbacks only served to make them even more successful. And the entrepreneurs explained that the growth of their companies, the conquest of new markets, the improvements to their corporate strategies and products were only achieved in response to setbacks and crises. So one of them told me, we need setbacks and we need the crisis so that we change and that we can learn and then that we can go on.
I'm reminded certainly of the classic line, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. Or maybe even, if I can quote Nietzsche, was man nicht übrigt, macht man stärker. What doesn't destroy one makes one stronger, perhaps.
Oh, I see, you know good charm, yeah? You know charm well.
Well, I'd be sure. Moving from that perspective onwards, clearly people can find out more details about this in your book, The Wealth Elite, a groundbreaking study of the psychology of the super rich. Do you have a website, Ryano, as well, that people can go to find out more details about what we've been talking about today?
Yes, there's the website where you find some the reviews about the book and some pages from the book, and it's thewealthelite.com.
Absolutely.
Well, yes, I like the title of the book, and then thewealthelite.com. If you Google it, you will find it, and you will find all the reviews. There were a review in Financial Times and so on. I'm very proud about it. And it's translated as well in China, and I've been there to a tour in five Chinese cities, because it's really the first study who deals with people who are so rich in the world.
Well, we have two final questions to ask you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us, or indeed Skype link with us this morning? Has it been okay for you?
Yes.
Good.
Sure.
This is good news.
Skype, I prefer it. It's much better quality than telephone. I have so bad experience with telephone. Skype is great.
Well, there's always that panic in terms of whether the connection worked. It has, of course, which is clearly showing the importance of a positive attitude. So can we prevail upon you to join us again in 2019? Will you join us to share some more thoughts about your studies and work about the attitudes of the super rich and more? Will you be kind enough to return?
Exactly, because I conducted a new study. It will be published in Germany in February, and it was the first international survey how people think about the rich, about prejudice and stereotypes about the rich. And I conducted a survey with maybe you know Ipsos Mori in UK, in United States, in France, and in Germany. So it's the first international study to compare how people in these countries think about the rich. And I can tell you people in UK were less envied than people in France and in Germany. Yes, so I like Britain for this.
It's going to be absolutely ideal in terms of obviously the other political thing that's happening over the next few months. You may have heard of it. I think it's something called Brexit or something. We won't talk about that, but that's another whole issue. Dr. Rainer Zittelmann, many thanks indeed once again. And we simply have to say, Fröhliche Weihnachten.
Thank you. Happy Christmas. Thank you. Bye.
The joys of the carpenters, and please, please, Mr. Postman, send me a letter, and so on. And well, as Christmas approaches, many Brits are scrambling, literally scrambling, to wrap their gifts, or settees in the case of Ian Lennox, and get them out on time so that loved ones all over the world receive them on time. And as we approach December the 19th, that is the day which is statistically the biggest of the year. Over 30 million packages will be delivered by the joys of UPS, and a whole range of other things will be happening. So why not take the opportunity to actually welcome a gentleman who's going to be so busy? It's just unbelievable. But he's going to deliver it because he is the operations director at UPS UK. He is the wonderful Mohammed Said Hofer. How are you, Mohammed?
Hey, good morning. I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Now, in terms of this, globally, 800 million packages delivered during peak this year. That's up 3.5%. Is this all due to internet traffic? Is it a case of, it's what it is, or is it a case of, yeah, we know that UPS are so good, we're going to test them each year?
Yeah, obviously retail plays a big role during the peak season, but, you know, on the one hand, we make sure everybody gets a Christmas gift, but we also have our regular volume that we have during all year, so important healthcare packages, making sure every patient gets the package delivered.
Now, this particular survey that's been put together shows a number of sort of interesting facts in terms of how things are developed. Giving gifts is much more important, people, than the other joys of Christmas, apparently. People say that giving gifts is more important to them than being on the other side. That actually comes seventh in this list. And also eating Christmas food. Were you surprised, Hamid, by any of these particular findings?
No, to be honest, not really, because if I imagine my Christmas, you know, season sitting around with the family, it's always nice to open a Christmas gift. But, you know, seeing the smiles on the faces of, you know, family members and friends, I think that's even a bit nicer. So not really surprising for me.
Well, that makes perfect sense, really. Now, Mohammed, I detect, is it a slight German accent that we actually have there?
Yes, absolutely. I grew up in Germany. I've been with UPS 20 years and just relocated to lovely London 7 months ago.
Well, as we like to say, ausgezeichnet, because it's we were just over in Berlin a few moments ago, actually. So we moved from Berlin and Dr. Rainer Zittelmann to your good self. It just proves at the end of the day, you want efficiency, you employ a German to actually head up the UPS thing. Sorry, it's a cliche, but what the heck.
I think it's not only German. We, you know, if you look around across the globe, we place a lot of, you know, value on diversity. It's good to have different kind of nations, ages, experiences, because that really makes up a good team.
We've had a couple of people in the studio, three people in the studio, been looking at the findings of the survey. Let's start off with Andrew King. Andrew, any thoughts that you'd like to put to Mohammed?
Well, I think that one ring endorsement that I have for UPS is that the post stopped being delivered at my house for about 3 days, which was worrying. I assume that this doesn't happen when you send your gift with UPS.
No, we've been preparing all year long for peak. You know, we are hiring up to 100,000 peak helpers, so that's kind of a full Wembley stadium of people globally to make sure you get your packages delivered. We won't stop delivering packages.
Whoa, a Wembley stadium full of people, just actually, it's like little elves at Christmas time. They were working through that whole process. And Emma.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Christmas is a pretty stressful time for you. I mean, does it mean that you don't look forward to when Christmas comes around because you know that you're going to have all these parcels?
I mean,
yeah,
does anybody think, Mohammed, about the role of the operations director at UPS UK at Christmas? I mean, is it a case of come Boxing Day, you're literally just lying in a sort of frenzied heap somewhere and saying, I can't take any more?
Yeah, but we're still looking forward to that. It's a special time of the year. And to be honest, looking at our people, everybody's on board. You know, everybody's prepared. Like I said, we have 100,000 helpers. And, yeah, obviously everybody is happy when, you know, looking back, we were able to deliver a successful peak. But, no, we're not stressed. We're busy. But we're looking forward for the last days before Christmas.
Ben Lewis.
Yes, I mean, my mum's a postie. She works for Royal Mail.
Oh my word, really?
I know she does, and yeah, I mean, obviously, I know
not quite as efficient as UPS, obviously.
Of course not. It's a very busy time of the year. I can understand that. Obviously, what do you find? Do you find your sales double, or do you think do they overall increase by so much that it becomes operationally quite hard to handle, or is it manageable from that kind of perspective?
Well, like I said, because we've been preparing all year, it is definitely manageable. And yeah, I mean, if you look at the statistics, we deliver on average around 20, 21 million packages during the regular year. And this year before peak, it's going to be, you know, during the peak week, up to 37 million on a specific day and up to 35 on average. So yeah, it's nearly doubling up. But like I said, we are prepared. Everybody is ready to support the operation, and we have enough supporters. Remember the Wembley Stadium to get it delivered.
Now, clearly, we have Prince Albert to actually thank for the big Christmas tree that's up in Norway. Obviously, we thank Norway as well, of course, but obviously Prince Albert for traditions and various other factors. What are your own favourite Christmas traditions, Mohammed?
My personal favourite Christmas tradition?
Yeah.
Yeah, sitting obviously around with my beloved family, my wife, my mom, which is still in Germany. So she's waiting for me to come home and really spend the time with the beloved ones. And we have a special tradition. We always meet one night before Christmas with all the friends who are spread around the world. at a certain Christmas market. So looking forward to that.
A bit of Glühwein and Bratwurst.
Exactly, you got it.
You are. You see, we like to do our research from that point of view. And in terms of, say, the rest of the things on this list, Christmas songs played on the radio and receiving gifts from others. We mentioned that carol singers coming ninth at the list. And in the top 10, last of the whole thing, Christmas parties, 10th on their list of favourite Christmas things, which is wonderful for that point of view. Fairly straightforward, presumably, if people want to find out further details about this survey, Mohammed, do they go to the UPS website, or is there another place you would point them?
No, absolutely. UPS.com is the perfect source.
Well, Mohammed Saeed Hofa, Operations Director at UPS UK. We take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephone link this morning. Has it been okay for yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
And then we have to, as we did with Ryan, say Fröhliche Weihnachten.
Yes, Merry Christmas. I'm a friend.
Christmas gifts that I can recall was given to me about 10 years ago by my good friend Mel Torme. You might say that it's worn so well that without it, to me, a Christmas just wouldn't be Christmas. Nelson? Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow, we'll find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
Version of Nat King Cole's The Christmas Song, which shall hopefully take us round to William Sitwell via the Monkees and their live version of Silver Bells.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile. And on every street corner you hear silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Hear them ring, ring-a-ling. Soon it will be Christmas Day. Strings of streetlights, even stoplights, blink a bright red and green. as the shoppers rush home with their treasures. Hear the snow crunch, see the kids bunch. This is Santa's big scene. And above all the bustle you hear, silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Hear them ring, ring-a-ling. Soon it will be Christmas Day. It's Christmas time in the city. Hear them ring, ring-a-ling. Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend who is William Sitwell.
Quite right too. William, welcome to this eve of official Christmas Jumper Day, which of course launches tomorrow, and I'm sure in Northampton already the excitement will be building about Christmas Jumper Day.
Sorry, I'm just... put me into a coma having listened to that awful song.
Well, there you go.
Music yeah. like that should be banned. What are you doing playing it?
Oh, I'm glad you weren't here last night then. You'd love to hear the tunes that we had on last night, will you?
God, I've just set fire to myself to try and keep myself going.
How wintry. That's very wintry.
And to think of it, Davy Jones wasn't even a vegan when he was alive, but never mind. It's okay, it's all good. You know, it's work our way through the process. That's the important thing.
I told you I wouldn't appear on your show if you mentioned the B word.
I know.
You've gone and done.
It's okay. Shh. Move on. William, festive treats, etc. We've got three fine folk in the studio who are all, I mean, we've got Ben Lewis, of course, big fan.
Indeed.
Exactly. Andrew King, have you spoken to William before?
Yes, I have.
Exactly. Also, big fan. And Emma Street.
Yes, hello.
Exactly. What advice would you give these three fine folk as they prepare for the festive traditions such as Christmas Jumper Day, or indeed more as far as the thing is concerned?
Just don't do it.
it's water not having one for Christmas.
Actually, he does have one, and it's on our Christmas card. He's broken the mould. Christmas jumpers are now officially back because Walter is wearing one. Right. I think
there we go. He's a trendsetter, isn't he? Yeah,
good. Last week, of course, people who were privileged to get a paper copy of the I newspaper on Saturday, whilst, of course, I was at an open day at the University of Lincoln, were delighted to turn through the pages and find, yes, guest columnist William Sitwell. I thought, yes, absolutely, making good, sage comments as ever, William, about life, the universe, and various other bits and pieces. When can we look forward to your next views in the I newspaper?
Probably never. I don't know. I like working for that paper. Actually, mm-hmm. They're a good bunch, and you write the words, and they don't sub them too much. They pop them in mm-hmm. unchanged, and they send you a check. I mean, it's sort of just genius. It's wonderful. But I was writing about the desperate situation so many pubs are facing, closing down in the wake of all these coffee shops opening. Mm. But the only place where pubs are actually booming is Hackney. They've bucked the trend. We've lost 11,000 pubs since 2013, I think it is, or the last 10 years.
I think it works
the
out.
Only place where, yeah, with the only I've counted all of them.
I've been in all of them. I drank the last pints in all of them.
You see, that's what we like about William. That's why we know that he's a correspondent who actually does that extra mile, always, or extra kilometre, depending on which side of the fence you actually are.
Two pubs have shut in Lincoln this week, actually. Mm. Two pubs in Lincoln this week have shut. Oh.
Yeah, well, you see, it's these pathetic students. You're just not drinking enough.
I drink in my local very, very much.
It's all about the tyranny of the student union pub drawing us all in.
Right.
Yes. Now, let me ask you, guys, how important is routine on Christmas Day? Do you do the same thing every year? Is it very important? Do you have a strict timetable? Because I certainly do in my household. What's your routine?
Emma.
Yeah, we have a routine. I'm not sure if it's completely strict, as in time-wise, but we do have a set routine that we have to have our breakfast before we go in and open presents. Mm-hmm. And then family come round, and then dinner will be at a certain time, and then... Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, Andrew?
Yeah, we have a routine, and that routine is sacred, really. No one ever breaks it. We go downstairs,
it's a sacred time of year. Yeah. It's the birth of our Saviour, Jesus Christ.
Absolutely, yeah.
It should be sacred, let's face it.
Absolutely. We go downstairs and we open presents by the tree. Then we'll grab something for breakfast, often chocolate. We like our presents first. Yeah. Mm. Then we all help out with making Christmas dinner. And, you know, we've never actually had a fallout on Christmas Day since everyone began to pull their weight on Christmas dinner. It's amazing how that happens.
Ben.
Yes, the traditions are very much alike in the Lewis household. We do all the same things. We do, you know, the food prep, we do it the day before, actually. Ooh. So we have more time on the day to enjoy ourselves. And traditions as well include eating and drinking so much that you fall asleep by the same time as well. It's about 2 o'clock.
This is, of course, one of the things that I was keen for you to actually raise with William, this notion of preparing it beforehand. I mean, William, are you in favour of that, or would you say, no, you should rise at 4 a.m. and actually prepare it all on the day?
No. I mean, prep the day before. You should peel your carrots the day before, if you're going to peel them. You peel your... You can half-semi-do your roast potatoes. I actually think that... If you peel and boil and roast your potatoes for about half an hour, then you can finish them off the next day. It saves time. You can make your gravy the day before. Definitely, but just don't do everything, because otherwise you might end up eating it the day before.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'm glad William agrees. William, what is it for you this Christmas? Is it a goose? Is it a turkey? Or what have you got in mind? What's on the plan for the Sitwell household?
Well, I will be in Somerset with my mother-in-law, and it'll be turkey, and it'll be just a traditional Christmas. And our routine, or the routine I always have, is no presents until you've come back from church, and then you're allowed a glass of champagne, and then you can open one each.
Yeah, yeah. You see, it's that kind of line which I feel even Jacob Rees-Mogg would find acceptable from that point of view.
Poor old Jacob.
Still, 200 sounds better than 199, let's face it. You know, in terms of, we won't go in and put into a political line, that side of things. Was he like that at school, William, by the way?
He was splendid at school. He was wonderful. He hasn't changed.
He used to
walk down the street bobbing along, carrying all of his school books in a Harrods carrier bag.
Excellent.
You can just imagine round spectacles the lot.
Saying one day, it's marvellous. I will be a friend of William Sitwell, I suppose. That's the key thing. It's marvellous. Great stuff. William, clearly the book that most people need to get, if they haven't already got it, and get several copies, obviously, is Eggs or Anarchy. Still worthwhile getting, and an absolute routine. Is there a sequel in the works for 2019?
Well, that's a very good question. There is, in fact, and I really need to get up and write it. I'm writing a book called The Restaurant, which is a history of eating out. So it's the story of humanity going out and paying for food and eating out. So, I've got to... I better get up and start writing this. I think I've got 90,000 words to write by June, and I've written none so far. So.
Yeah, but, you know, you've got 6 months, so it's just about 12,000 words a month, more or less.
Before. Yeah. Oh, no.
I think it was like 6 dissertations. It'd be fine.
Makes my dissertation sound like a page.
Exactly.
Good. I lost my job, isn't it, Alex? I've got time to write a book.
We were too big. Too big for this. It's very important. It works through that process. That's the important
thing. I hope you're using eco-friendly paper, William.
I'm not right. I use a computer these days.
There we are.
There we go.
Step 4. William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Very, very important, a crucial one.
So will you be back with us for our final one of the year next Thursday?
Yes, please.
Fantastic. I won't ask you for your comments on James J. Turner's winning entry into this Christmas, because after last night...
We won't bother.
Just, here it is. William Sitwell. Round of applause for William Sitwell, please. And here's James.
I'll sing a hymn to the old alone, to the souls without a home, to the people who no one phones this Christmas, to the hearts that are filled with fear, to the eyes that are filled with tears. They're crying but no one hears this Christmas. Oh, I only have my love to give this Christmas. Oh, I only have my love to give to you this Christmas. This Christmas. To the mad ones and the dispossessed, whose every minute puts them to the test, to the broken ones and all the rest this Christmas, to the people with £1 million, they worship money but it let them down, their dreams are shattered on the ground this Christmas.
Just a reminder that the Stone Tapes Christmas edition is coming up this evening at 7 o'clock. We've got lots of great stuff happening on Siren Radio. We'll be back next week with the final two midweek drives of the year 2018. I mean, it's amazing. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Jeremy Harbour, Ian Lennox, Ryan Sidebottom, Mohammed Saeed Helfer, and William Sitwell, and you, dear listener. And thanks in the studio to Emma Street. Have you enjoyed your time on the programme, Emma?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Back with us in 2019?
Yeah,
of course, because she'll be working over Christmas in a high street store where every little helps.
Yeah.
If you want to. 4 a.m.
4 a.m.
Right. Yeah. So you could listen to the show then next
week.
You could send in text, etc. Yeah. Andrew, have you enjoyed your second return visit?
I certainly have. It's been a great second coming back for the show.
There we are, second coming. Very good. Nice little line there. Not here. Did you see what you did? Back with us again in 2019?
I certainly hope to be.
Excellent. This is good. And Ben?
Of course.
We'll see you next week.
Yep, and then 7th of January I'm back.
So Christmas, Christmas jumper tomorrow.
I can bring a festive jumper.
And of course, tomorrow is National Jumper Day thing. Remember it. It's worth accessing. That's it. We're out of here. What shall we say? Happy National Jumper Day. 1, 2, 3. Happy National Jumper Day.